I was born into poverty. Okay. But through my lifetime, I've been able to escape poverty by making good decisions. Everyone in, you know, my cousins and my family, they're on welfare, public assistance. They've kind of been trapped in perpetuating the cycle where, you know, I had to kind of step out and, you know, I was able to graduate high school and go to college. And so I've had some exposure to economic opportunities that my family members haven't.
That's interesting.
And I think it comes down to personal choice. And we were talking about responsibility. Some people, I think, in the African-American community make choices that are poor choices that our counterparts don't make.
In a world of incompetent bosses, micromanagers, and petty tyrants, one management professor claims that he can help you become the kind of leader that you would want to follow. You are listening to The Leadersmith. Now, here is your host, Darren Gurdis.
Okay, so on this episode of The Leadersmith, I'm going to be talking to a unicorn. This is a African-American Republican conservative. And if you believe the media, there's none of them, except for maybe Candace Owens. Other than that, where are they? But they are here. They do exist. And we're going to talk about some of their opinions. Morris, welcome to the show.
Dr. Gurdis, glad to be here with you. Thanks for having me.
I'm so glad that you could be here. Now, I wanted to talk to you because so if I'm hearing the racial narrative correctly, so there's one side that says, look, I'm not a racist. None of my friends are racist. How do we help? We sincerely don't want you to feel that way. And then there's another side of the narrative, the left progressive side that says, no, you are a racist by default, and your narrative doesn't count because you're the majority, so you have to listen to the minority. So I am skipping right over them and asking the minority of the minority for their opinion. Of course, they'll probably write me off and say, well, he's just majority and doesn't count, and Uncle Tom and whatever else. But in fact, so I did a quick cut of the math yesterday. So there's roughly 37 plus million African Americans in the United States, right? Okay, so I just Googled that. If Google lied to me, then somebody correct me. There were 8% that voted for Donald Trump in the last election. So either they missed it, they were radically deceived, or they actually believe it. I'm going to assume that they actually wanted to vote for Donald Trump. So 8% of that 37,000, and you're going to get about 3 million blacks that voted for Donald Trump. Take out for just to be conservative, let's say it's 2.5 million. So there's 2.5 million, and we should probably respect your position or opinion as a minority within a minority just as much as we should respect the minority position, and that's a valid position. So what is your position? How do you view race?
Well, that's a good question. How do you view race? I think we put a lot of emphasis on race, or at least the left wants to keep the conversation, I believe, on race, to keep people distracted from what tangibly is causing division in America. Why are black people seem to be inferior to their counterparts, majority white people? Why is there this inferiority complex?
Do you have that inferiority complex? Do you feel that you are oppressed, or how do you view it?
No, not at all. I don't think, as a black man in America in 2020, I don't feel oppressed. I do not feel hunted. I do not feel, that I'm at any disadvantage than any other, you know, male counterpart. I think statistically, you know, I was looking at some of the numbers too. Some people are coming to the understanding that it's an economic issue. I think for whatever reason, we get a lot of platitudes. We get a lot of empty gestures from the left. You know, woe is the black person in America. Well, what are some tangible solutions to give African Americans, to give black people economic gains? Because I think looking at some of the research that I was looking at, it seems like over the past 50 years, like the poverty gap in black America hasn't really closed with the white counterpart. parents. Mm-hmm. So we seem to be missing something here. So what can we do to give Black people, to give African Americans and brown people, what can we do, I guess, to help them rise up out of their circumstances?
Right. So
get into the middle class and beyond.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. What do you attribute to the cause of this? Is it white people trying to keep you down, or just because they're white keeping you down, or is it something other? How do you diagnose what causes the lack of those gains as it's perceived?
Well, see, that's a question. Is it institutional racism? Is it systematic racism? Or is it just failed policy? I think more so of the latter. I think it's failed policy in America. You know, I was reading an article in The Economist, and one of the things that stuck out to me is the writer said, as income declines, so does the propensity to turn out at the ballot box. So maybe that's why we're seeing a lot of these inner cities being ignored, because the voting constituency isn't, I guess, getting the attention of the so-called political leaders. So they're like, oh, well, we kind of can count that, you know, this percentage of the vote's going to turn out, whether it be unions or what have you. We will keep just going along, and there's no substantial changes. Mm-hmm. People have to work. People have to provide for themselves. That's a basic, you know, principle there. So I think a little bit we got to somehow have to find a way in America to generate some policies, to get people to rise up out of poverty. I think the economic aspect is, I think, why Black people feel disenfranchised in America.
Yeah, right. And I believe that that's true. I mean, so there's a couple of issues here. One is feeling like police brutality, and we can talk about that if we want in a little bit. But let's talk about the economics, because you raised it. So if there is a disparity between economics, is there a cause for it? That is it systemic? You know, some kind of oppression, some kind of holding down, or is there some other cause creating that, or a bundle of causes perhaps creating that? What's going on there?
That's a good question. And that's what I'm, you know, me personally, because it's like just taking my own personal life. I was born into poverty. Okay. But through my lifetime, I've been able to escape poverty by making good decisions. Everyone and, you know, my cousins and my family, they're on welfare, public assistance. They've kind of been trapped in perpetuating the cycle where, you know, I had to kind of step out and, you know, I was able to graduate high school and go to college. And so I've had some exposure to economic opportunities that my family members haven't.
That's interesting.
And I think it comes down to personal choice. And we were talking about responsibility. Some people, I think, in the African-American community make choices that are poor choices that our counterparts don't make, whether they consciously have to make them or not. You look into, you know, if I was born statistically, you know, in the inner cities, I'm going to come up against a lot of things, poverty, drugs, so many obstacles. Mm-hmm. But you have to consciously make choices to avoid those things to get where you want to go. If you want to be a prosperous, law-abiding citizen, there's going to be things you have to do to get out of your circumstance.
Yeah,
so that's one of the things that I would advocate to my brothers and sisters in the African American community is we got to take responsibility for the choices we make.
And so you're articulating the divide that I have been. So in the last 3 weeks, this has been on everybody's radar, right? Everybody is now paying attention to it. And so I started asking friends on Facebook, like, okay, how many people do you know that are personally, that you know that are racist, like that really like, hey, you know, we need to go back to that system, or, you know, hey, you hear this joke about whatever, or like they would confide that joke in you, or you've seen them make a discriminatory act. And it's been terribly small. It's been something like 0.00001 to 5%, somewhere in there for most of them. Now, my friends who are on the left, they would first lecture me about how you don't understand, you don't get it, it's about systemic racism. And then they would tell me about how we're all racist and whatever. No, but how many people do you actually know? And even for them, it was very small. And then there were some exceptions. Some African Americans actually had some higher numbers, and their personal experience was inflated to 10 or 15% or whatever. And I'm sorry about that. I really hate that people actually experience that kind of silly ignorance right now. But the difference, what that little experiment showed me was, the people that wanted to lecture me about systemic were all from the left. And I was thinking, oh no, this is really a left-right divide based on these assumptions. And then I started processing it a little bit more and trying to really figure it out. And I was putting this out. I was saying, I think I'm much less enthusiastic or optimistic that we're going to get to a solution, because what I'm seeing is a deep assumptions driving the split. So it's not a black-white split. It's not like, oh, well, I hate that black guy, so that's why I have this position. It's not that at all. I have this different base of assumptions. When I said that, a friend of mine who's an economist, a former colleague, said, well, I think there's a individualist-collectivist divide here too. And economists are often as right or as wrong as they're right. They get us closer, and I appreciate that, but they don't have the full answer. And to his credit, he understands that, but that was a good piece of the puzzle for me to understand this. Mm-hmm. And then I ultimately settled on what you just said without saying the same thing. I think the divide is how we see, how we picture personal responsibility as opposed to collective guilt of society or collective it's not my fault. I have too many obstacles on the blame. So do you have a choice in the matter? And that's what you just described. You make good choices. You get certain outcomes. What you just described, let me ask you this too, because we didn't talk about this, but by the way, for my audience who can't see me, you are a black man. I mean, you're interracial, right? But if I didn't know that you were, I knew you from 15 years ago when you were in my classes, but you are actually a black man. You are not an actor.
Right. I'm just as black as Barack Obama.
Okay. So, and I would never have known any backstory. Just like you wouldn't know the backstory with Obama unless you knew the backstory of Obama. Right. Okay. So your relatives that did not pull themselves out of poverty, where are they politically? Because I think that's part of the crux of it, is if you feel disenfranchised, if you're seeing disparate results, but you're not looking necessarily at the different inputs of responsibility or different inputs of how you avoid the obstacles or whatever it is, but why don't we end at the same finish line? So go, your relatives.
Oh, my relatives back in Maryland, they are overwhelmingly Democrat. They vote Democrat, and some of them have kind of disenfranchised me because I'm a Trump supporter. Yeah. But the thing about it is, you know, they're hooked into the system. Their livelihood comes from what promises they can get tangibly financially from the left.
Gotcha. So, and what you just said was really interesting. So they disenfranchise you because you're a Trump supporter. So theoretically, I'm disenfranchising blacks because I'm part of this people group, and that people group is disenfranchising you. So you're a minority.
Right. I'm Uncle Tom and all those disparaging things, just like Candace Owens, some of us others out there, Diamond and Silk. You know, we're just doing this for whatever reason. I saw some things on Twitter about financial gain, that we're being paid somehow to speak out.
You'd like to sign up for those checks then, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, it's quite funny sometimes what I hear out there.
So, okay. So we touched on systemic racism. So you view it as not systemic. You view it as personal responsibility. Tell me what you do. What is legitimately systemic and what's not? So I would agree that Jim Crow is legitimately systemic.
Does that make sense? Haven't had Jim Crow for like 50, 60 years. I mean, I don't know anybody living within my family who personally experienced Jim Crow. I mean, that's how generationally far we were removed from it.
Okay, so now I will talk to people and they'll say, well, the justice system isn't fair. And there are people that will put these memes up here and show a white guy and a black guy and see, you know, this person got this much for bail, this person got that much for bail, and see how it's systemic. Well, what we don't know from that meme is, you know, what were the priors or what was the history or what was the, I mean, right. Was it exactly the same? So we have to treat like and like.
Can I share an experience?
Yeah, absolutely.
From myself. Okay, so when I was about 15 years old, I lived in a very affluent neighborhood at that time. And I got into a fight with some kids, some white kids. There was some trash talking. And, boys get a little testosterone, gets flaring up. So, we fought. And I beat these guys up. Their parents decided to call the police and have me arrested for assault. And that experience kind of woke me up to the whole system. I was apprehended. I was not put in handcuffs. And, I was treated with dignity and respect when I went to the police station. And even going into the whole like court process, they were very fair to me, and I never served any kind of jail time. I had to write an apology letter. Mm-hmm. So how do you attribute my experience?
Yeah. So now here's the thing. That's counterbalanced by the experience. And rightly, other people have legitimate experiences, right? I can't take anything away from anybody's experience. My experience is different than yours, which is different than my neighbor around the corner. He's awesome. Great guy. Black man. And he tells me this. Because I've been asking, he knows that I'm honestly trying to pursue and understand what's going on. And so I think a lot of African-Americans are exhausted by trying to explain their plight, especially when people are hard-headed and don't get it. Some people don't get it because they don't get it or don't want to get it. I understand that. Some people don't get it because they simply don't agree with the core base of assumptions and simply reject that. But he understands that I'm legitimately trying to unpack that. I'm a professor. This is what I do for a living, is try to understand phenomenon and talk about it and simplify it. Okay. So, but he was telling me about his experience, and his experience was this. He shows up at a store on a corner, not too far from our house. And it's early in the morning. He's about to get something, but the police were called because of something. And he looks like, skin color, he looks just like somebody who had committed some crime somewhere. That when the police get there, they're kind to this white man. They say, "Sir, stay in your car." And to him, they're like, you stay right there. Don't." And they're harsher with him. But they're harsher with him for a reason. And that reason is the group affecting him. So it's racism, but it's not like they're personally racist against him. It's they're called because a black man did X. And so, right. And so that creates an extra layer of animosity between the police and the individuals that the police are trying to serve. And I don't know. Do you understand?
Well, the statistics will show you. I mean, I've seen some things that they, I mean, even I've heard this in with my black, family too, about how black cops are worse than white cops against black people. how black cops are more harsher and more racist. I have a hard time computing that. I mean, I think it's people go for the low hanging fruit. I think people just jump off assumptions. Like, we don't know case by case. I don't think the American legal system, I think there's problems. Don't get me wrong. I think, there's obviously I do support some of the reforms that the president is trying to push through. I agree with some of those things that the president is trying to do. But I don't think the system is set up to cause black people to fail. I just have a hard time seeing that.
I think that's really the divide. Some people think that the system is out to get them. This is a white racist system because white people happen to be the dominant majority class. They're inherently racist. And I'm going to talk about that in just a little bit. I don't know that that's the case, but I value his experience. I understand that that's a legitimate experience. He's had that. But he's not bitter about it. He recognizes it. Look, my small group leader from church is in the same category. He's a black man married to a white woman with interracial children, right? And so he's got to walk between these worlds. And as he walks between these worlds, what he told me was, I'm getting penalized for something somebody else in my community did. Now, that's not fair, but I understand that that's what happened. It's not like they're just out to get, like they woke up in the morning thinking, I'm going to go see if I can harass a black man. I mean, it's a balanced understanding of what's going on, I think. Correct me if I'm wrong, but he's not automatically attributing the worst stereotype to the other side, which is exactly what you're not supposed to do if you want to solve anything racially.
Right. It's just, I think, Dr. Gerdes, for me, from what I see, it's just easier to play the victim than take responsibility for your life. It's easier to just say, woe is me, blame society, rather than take personal responsibility. We've had a black president. Black people have, in America, have had access now to some, I mean, I was just going over, we haven't made, there's some areas where we haven't made gains, and we, you know, I'd like to see more gains, but in the Fortune 500, you know, we have four black CEOs. Okay. I'd like to see a little bit more growth there. I'd like to see some more black CEOs. Okay.
Yeah, and that's, but, that's something I talk about in class. If that's really the dividing line, that kind of thing, where we look at it, we go, okay, well, there's only four black CEOs in the Fortune 500. Should there be 50% if there are not 50%, if there's 13% of the population, should there be 13% African-American CEOs? Why does there have to be one? That's the first question. If there's not, what's causing it not to be? And that's the discussion that we'll have in class, is what things are getting in the way. Well, it's racism. What else could it be? Well, wait a minute. Racism, it could, let's say, okay, there's this much, and I'm holding up my hands for people who can't see, right? I'm holding up my hands about 3 feet apart. Let's say that this is, there's 3 feet worth of issues. Is racism, does that account for 3 feet worth of the difference, or this 2 inches, does that account for the racism? And then there's fatherlessness or education gaps or other things along the way that are in different denominations in the African American community than they are in the white community. And what is that? I'm not apologizing or, you know, being an apologist for the system. I'm not. I'm just saying, what else accounts for it? Can you speak to anything there? Like, is it all racism, or is this much, or is it somewhere in between? Or it's a big bundle of yarn to unwind.
Well, I mean, we have to go through the process, the pipeline. Okay, how do you become a CEO? I guess you be, you know, you're a senior vice president for a company, or you go up through the corporate ladder. So, you know, are we seeing more African Americans get access to being in, you know, corporate America? I mean, is that a lane where you see a lot of African Americans applying to jobs, or people graduating, you know, colleges getting those positions? I mean, that's something, you know, to look at. Are we giving African Americans internships in corporate America? I mean, these are things we could tangibly look at.
Are they getting to college at the same rate? Because the public
schools
are worse. Are they getting? Are they now? What's the measure of success in public schools? Why did any kids do well in school? Because parents are on top of them, right? Making sure that they get their work done. In a single parent home, your parent is working that double shift, doesn't have the time to stay on top of you. So it's one thing leading to another, to another, to another, to another. And it's a lot of things that are interconnected. It's not just, as you're describing, it's not just like, well, it's just racism. What else can it be? Now, some people would describe that as systemic. You describe that as choices. Now, it's not just your choice. It could be the choice of the dad who walked away from the family. And I mean, this isn't just African American. The white population is starting to mirror African American trends from 30 years ago, and so they're going to have just as much dysfunction if they continue on that same path over time. Does that make sense?
Right. But then, you get down to the individual. You look at somebody like a LeBron James, who escaped he won the DNA genetics lottery, and he was able to become a basketball star. But his upbringing is kind of inspirational, growing up in inner city Akron, and look where he's been able to, you know, take his life. I mean, I think I think America is the greatest country in the world, Dr. Gerdes. Mm-hmm. And if you're a black person in America, you have no excuse, okay? Because you look at the poverty and you look at the oppression across the globe compared to what we have here in America, it's not even close.
Yeah, flesh out a little bit, because I think we just get so myopic about how we're not meeting exactly the same places. The outcomes are disparate here, so we don't think about, well, yeah, it's not right quite here, but yeah, it's worse over there. I mean, if I was a white guy in Japan, I would never be treated with any level of I'm gaijin, right? I would never be treated as an equal ever. I mean, that's just culturally never going to happen.
Right.
Here, at least, there's a big fraction of the population. I don't think in terms of color and this is why I'm a racist, apparently, according to the left. I don't think in terms of color. It never would have struck me to think in terms of color, whether it's you or my roommate in college or my two black roommates, three black roommates in graduate school, two different times while I was in graduate school, right? And so it just, or the black man that married my wife and I, it just doesn't, you know, it doesn't, it's not part of my filter, but it's a part of a filter from the left that wants to emphasize race for some reason that I don't understand. Maybe you understand. You're probably more steeped in this world because you have to be. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, That's what the left would want me to say. You know, I'm somehow special because, you know, I have more melanin in my skin than you do. But I, you know, from a Christian's perspective, you know, we're all made in the image of God. You know, we're human beings. We have struggles. We have failures. We have successes. I think we all want the same thing. I had mentioned that to you yesterday. I think in America, we all want prosperity. And that's one thing I really applaud the president. And I think he gets a bum rap. But I think he's speaking about jobs. He's speaking about economic growth. And that's the one thing that's going to lift. That's the tide that lifts all boats. That's the one thing that's going to help a black America is the economy and the unemployment. So I was looking at a statistic. It said that 4.9% of, full-time workers live below the poverty line. So basically, if you have full-time work, you're guaranteed to live above the poverty line in America. So giving people access to jobs, full-time employment is a key. The left has always said education was the key to beat poverty. But I'm seeing in the statistics and the numbers, really giving someone a job, a full-time job, is a way to, you know, beat poverty.
So they're actually both right, because the education gets you a better job, which helps you beat poverty. But there's a couple other things that, with that. One, I want to go back to what you said with Trump. Trump had done more for African-Americans in driving that number down. Right. Mm-hmm. The unemployment
levels. Yeah.
There's a difference between white unemployment and black unemployment as groups. And Trump had driven that down to a phenomenal range that Obama never got anywhere close to, because Trump was focused on jobs. Mm-hmm. Obama talked about it a lot, but he didn't actually do anything with it. So when you were talking about, I had another thought that just escaped me. You were talking about, getting a job and the responsibility of that. Okay, so there's also a statistic that goes a long way back. If you're in a two-parent family, your odds of being in poverty are terribly small. This goes back to Wade Horn, and this has been consistent over time, but I remember hearing this in graduate school in 96, I think. If you are this goes back to your question about function of choice. If you are over 20, you have completed your education and you are married when you have your first child, what are your odds of living in poverty? And again, I want to repeat those things. You are over 20, you are married, and you have completed your education. Okay. Mm-hmm. What are your odds of living in poverty in the United States?
What are your odds
of living in poverty?
Oh, probably less than 5%.
Yeah, you're close. It's 8%. Mm-hmm. Okay. You are under 20, if you are unmarried and you have not completed your education, what are your odds? Unmarried when you have your first child and you've not completed your education, under 20, unmarried and you have a child and you have not completed your education, what are your odds of living in poverty in the United States?
I would jump up maybe 20%.
80%. So a function of choice, and no government program can touch those three variables. But we act like it's just arbitrary, and that's a big difference. Now, if you think about people that you know that are in poverty, think of those variables, and you'll see a lot of that. In fact, if you're simply married, your odds of living in poverty are significantly less, because now you have two people potentially carrying the weight, and it just changes things, which is why conservatives value marriage. And, you know, it's good for society. It holds things together. The locus that we look to is the family unit, which is heresy to the other side. Okay. I want to keep moving. Black Lives Matter. What do you think of the Black Lives Matter movement? Okay, so we're going to stop there. I try to keep these episodes short, and I do that intentionally, not more than 20 minutes, and we've already gone a half hour. But if you want to hear what he has to say about Black Lives Matter and social justice and systemic racism, come back for the next episode, and thank you for listening to The Leadersmith.